Hi everyone, this is your co-host Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist Patty Wilson. Hi Patty.
Hello Stu, how are you this evening?
Pretty good. I guess you're in some new digs.
I am in new digs, and it's been a couple weeks of, as I told you, I felt like everything was a journey because we moved, and so I'm still working all the kinks out of all the different systems in this place, but here we are.
So we'd like to thank our subscribers who stayed with us this long. If you're joining us for the first time, we thank you. If you are a repeat subscriber or listener, we thank you for coming back. If you haven't already, please consider clicking the subscribe button that's down below. If you haven't already, click the bell on YouTube so you get notified when we release new content. We also have in the description a link to our Linktree where we have basically everything paranormalist related, and I think I covered everything. Okay, so what do we have?
Tonight we're going to do good ghosts. We did kind of, you know, dangerous ghosts before, and first of all, I'd like to apologize to everybody for missing that last week during the move. Everything just got all hanky, and we didn't have internet and what have you, and I wanted to do this last week, so it's the good ghosts. It's the other side of things, because I've always believed that there's more good ghosts than there are bad ghosts, and so it wasn't a hard sell to find the stories. So I thought I would start with one that I thought was really interesting. For those who are music fans, Dolly Parton has been very open about paranormal things that have happened in her life. And one of the stories that she tells is about, she had her grandmothers and her were very close. And she tells the story of one time she was getting ready to board a plane, and she glanced over in a corner near where you would go through the doorway to, you know, get on board the plane. And her grandmother was standing there, and she said, don't catch the plane. Don't catch the plane. And, you know, I'm sure Dolly Parton was startled. Her eyes got large. She stopped dead, and she turned around and said to the people with her, I'm not getting on this plane. And they thought she was crazy, but she kept saying, no, none of us are getting on this plane. None of us are getting on this plane. And she insisted that they wait for another plane. And it turned out that the flight crashed, and there were no survivors on that plane.
Yeah, I had heard that. Yeah. And that's,
yeah. And, you know, she had told this story many times because she believed that her grandmothers watched over her. And I just thought that was, you know, that is a quintessential good ghost story. I've told, you know, many stories about events that have happened in my life, the where there were good ghosts and what have you. So I thought I would talk about a few others. So this one, the next one is about Polly's Island in South Carolina. So Polly's Island is this beautiful island, and unfortunately it's in hurricane country. So every so often the island gets really badly devastated, and there are stories of a figure. Nobody knows exactly who he is. They just know that he is seen. There's different people who have different suspicions as to who the gray man is, but there is a man who's always referred to as the gray man. So he's literally a gray figure, and it usually is seen just prior to a hurricane hitting, a deadly hurricane. And so, for example, when Hurricane Hugo hit in 1989, the families that lived in the area, some of them saw the gray man walking across the beach the night before it all happened. Some of them knew the story and heeded the warning, and others didn't. He's always seen early in the evening, and usually a day or two prior to a hurricane, as though he's a harbinger warning them to, you know, to leave before it's too late. And I just, you know, I just thought that was a really interesting story. And it's an old one. This story dates way back to the end of the 1800s, when the first sightings of the gray man of Polly's Island happened. And there are multiple hurricanes, deadly hurricanes. Not every time a hurricane hits, because obviously hurricane season happens every year. But when there's a particularly dangerous one that's going to take out part of the island, he is almost always seen. So our next story is actually one from the early 2000s. This is a young lady who went to stay with a male friend of hers. She was a little surprised to see that he had almost an altar to his dead sister. And every night he would play like her favorite song, and he would have a drink of whatever her favorite alcohol was. And he was memorializing her. And he said his sister haunted him. And he told his friend, his lady friend, that as long as she was living in the house with him, his sister would keep her safe. And she didn't think a whole lot about it. She just thought it was sad that he was so wrapped up in the death of his sister. But that was until he went away for a couple nights. And she's staying in the house by herself. Somebody figured out he was gone, didn't realize he had a guest, and broke into the house in the middle of the night. When she heard the break-in, she got up, startled, not sure what to make of it, thinking it maybe he had come home, because she just heard somebody thumping around. And she walked out right into a man who had a knife. He was probably as surprised to see her as she was to see him. And the man pulled the knife on her and was trying to hold her at bay, telling her to stand still or he was going to kill her. And then all of a sudden, he looked behind her shoulder and he said, "Hey, lady, it's cool. It's cool. I am not doing anything. I swear." And he turned around and he ran in the opposite direction, went out the window. He'd come in. And when he was later caught, he insisted to the police that there was a dead woman behind her.
How did he know she was dead?
He said she looked dead. She had like the gray pallor, the gray eyes, and she was angry.
Oh,
and,
okay.
When the young man heard the story, he said, "That was my sister, and she was protecting you." And he truly believed it. And so does the young woman. She told the story, and she said, "I didn't believe this stuff until that night," but the look of horror and shock on this man's face, and then the subsequent confession to the police that, like, you know, "I didn't do anything. I took off." And they're like, "Why did you run away?" And then he told them. And as crazy as the story sounds, it's not the one you would expect somebody to make up.
No. I mean, especially you, if he looks shocked, you know, that's...
Yeah.
If you're robbing the place, or intending to rob the place, that's probably the last thing you're thinking of is to play charades, you know, so.
Sure. And I've heard stories of stuff like that before. I used to tell the story of the house called the Captain's House in between Bedford and Everett.
I was about to ask if it was like, yeah, the sea captain, but I didn't want to steal your thunder if you were going to tell that story this time.
Well, so if people would like to know, I've told it in a different podcast a long time ago, but I knew of a house in between Bedford and Everett in Pennsylvania, and the woman who owned the house last told me the story that on a couple occasions, she was in the store on the first floor of the house that she had run, and people had come in to rob her or harm her. One was she thought she was going to get raped, and the other time it was a robbery. And both times the would-be perpetrator like looked behind her, panicked, and took off. And she said she could smell the smoke, the pipe smoke that always accompanied seeing the sea captain who had built the house. So that reminded me very much of that story.
Me too. Yeah.
And then in that vein, in the early 1900s in New Jersey, there was a farmer by the name of Charles Henry Durand, and he lost his wife for normal reasons, like she had an illness and passed away. And a few months later, he was on his way home driving his horse and buggy when she appeared in front of him on the road. The horse stopped and wouldn't move, and she said to him, "There's danger at home. Stay away till morning." And the horse wouldn't move forward. So he had a hard time getting the horse moving again. It took quite a long time. And eventually he unhitched the horse and kind of pulled the rig over to the side of the road so others could pass. And it was late the next morning till the horse suddenly just seemed to be willing to go again. And so he did. And when he got to the house, he found that one of the windows had been pried open and there were muddy footprints all over the floor. Things were missing. The house had been ransacked. And that's when he had kind of looked in the window because he had noticed the window open, which was probably the saving grace for this man, because he noticed in the doorway to his bedroom there was a string attached to running outward, and by tracing it visually he could see that there was a shotgun attached. Had he opened the front door, he would have been shot in the chest. So whoever did this, and there's nobody ever was found to be guilty of doing this, but, and I apologize for the cat yodeling, he's 21 years old, he gets to do what he wants. But yeah, it was just interesting because he had no idea, he had no clue why somebody would do that to him, but his wife saved his life. And I just thought that was a really interesting story. Now, there's another story that I found really fascinating. So there's an area called Spanish Fork River. And in this river, and this would have been 2015, this is a river in Utah, the police officers were called there because there was a car that was in the river. Somebody noticed it and called 911 for assistance. When they got to the car, they could hear a woman screaming, help me, please. So they're thinking the car is partially submerged. She must have hit a pocket of air. She's, you know, scared to death and she needs help. So they reach out to get the car pulled out of the river. They pull the car open and, much to their shock, the woman is in the car strapped in and she's been dead for quite a long time. But there's a baby in the car. And the way the car had been, the baby had been in a pocket of water. And this is an infant child. And they couldn't explain it, but all the personnel that had been there, the emergency assist personnel, clearly heard when they first got there, a female screaming, help me, please. And from the coroner's report, she would have been dead a good hour prior to their arrival. So did she come back from the dead to save her child? You know, did she not know she was dead? I don't know the answer to this question, but I thought it was a really interesting story. And, you know, there are other stories of that. I mean, like this particular article, they actually interview officers who were there, who heard it. So it's, and they give their names. Officer Tyler Bledsoe, he said, for two nights I've laid awake trying to figure out exactly what could have happened. All I know is that I was there, that we all heard it, and that it was our extra motivation to hurry to get the car out of the water, not knowing there was a child in an infant seat in the back. And I thought that was a really interesting story. I love these kinds of stories because these are the stories that I think are the meat and potatoes of the paranormal community. We don't talk about them. They don't make the TV shows because they're not creepy, but they're really good stories. And I thought we should share some of them. So on Chris, okay, go ahead.
No, I was going to say in that situation, then the car would have had to have been nose down. And so the back of the car, there would have been a pocket there. But so that would have meant that mom would have met her demise.
Yeah, most likely within a couple seconds or a minute or two of hitting the water. You know, and you have to think about, well, how long was the car in the water before somebody came along? They called 911. How much time did it take to get the 911 crew out there? And then they realized that they had to get the car up out of the water. They could hear a person in there alive. So they decided to pull the car out and then attend to what they thought would be the live victim. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, so it was well over an hour she was in the water and submerged. And there are other such stories. There's a story we've talked about once before in Northern California, about a woman who was seen naked laying along the road and by a husband and wife late at night. And the woman was absolutely shaken by what she saw out the window. And it's like midnight and, you know, just an isolated woodsy kind of road. And she kept screaming at her husband, you know, keep going, there's a naked girl there. She thought it was a trap, like somebody did this so you'd stop and then they could attack you.
Right.
But as soon as they got to an area, this is prior to cell phones, so as soon as they got to an area where they could call for help, they called for help. And then the police officers realized that they had a missing woman and her child that had been reported somewhere in that vicinity a day earlier. And then they began to think, well, maybe the woman had been kidnapped and raped or something like that. They hunted up and down that road for quite some time. This actually made Unsolved Mysteries in the 1990s. And they did not find anything. So the one officer, he's just almost haunted by this story and by the conviction of this woman that she saw this woman laying there on the side of the road naked. And he decides to go back up there one more time and take one more look. And this time he decides to walk it, not drive it, in case he's missing something. And that's when he sees some broken branches that led him to realize the car had gone airborne, which means it didn't break the brush at the roadside, but further out in it down into a ravine. And he found that she had been dead upon impact, and her four-year-old son was laying in the car. He was dehydrated, but he was alive. And had he not been pushing himself due to something about this story, he would never have found the child in time. Another few hours would have been too much. But the only thing that anybody could believe is that she cared so much for her son that she came back from the dead to get attention. And where she was seen laying is where she went airborne.
I will have to look up and see exactly when that was, because I was in Northern California in the early 90s, 90 to 94.
Yeah. Yeah, she was just traveling through to a new job in a new area from like the further inland. And mm-hmm. it was like a new career, new start in life. And she was calling her mom and dad every time she stopped somewhere, and she'd say, hey, you know, we're going to stop for the night here, blah, blah, blah. And she had told her mom she was tired, but she was going to push on to get to the next town over that mountain range. And when she didn't get there and the next day came and nobody could get her, you know, she didn't call home like she had been doing every day, then they began to trace where was the last place they had heard of her being, what road was she on, and where could she have been. And they had reported her missing just prior to this.
So I don't recall if it was you telling the story before or if I read it in the Sacramento Bee.
It's an interesting story. But I thought it was really interesting, so I thought I'd share it with you. And so this next story comes from Christmas Eve, 2016. There's a woman in Shropshire, England. Her name was Janet Reynolds. And she had heard or felt that something was wrong in her house. You know how sometimes you just get this intuition? Something's just off and you're like, I'm not comfortable. Something's wrong. That kind of a thing.
Luckily, not too many times. Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she's laid down. She's kind of walked through the house, checked the kids, the whole nine yards, and nothing's out of place. Nothing's wrong. But she still has that uneasy feeling. So she decides to, you know, go to bed. This is ridiculous. And as she's laying down, she feels the blanket ripped off of her. And she sits up. She's really startled, turns on the light, and then she hears banging and screaming from someplace deep in the house. She jumps out of bed, absolutely horrified. Now, this isn't a child screaming or banging. This is what sounds like an adult, because you can hear the yelling. It's not a child's voice. It's not one of her children's voices. So she runs towards her children's room. She has a couple sons, and she runs toward their rooms, and she sees one of her children, Ethan. He's 18 months old, and he's laying there sound asleep. And then the other, and he's choking, you know, and like gagging in his sleep. She grabs him, she turns him over, she realizes that his airway got obstructed, and it's, you know, obstructed by the blanket and the pillow and what have you. It was suffocating, is basically what was happening. And she gets air into his airways, and she calms down, she calls for help, she tells them, you know, the whole story about something tore the blankets off her bed, woke her up, then she heard the screaming of the person, sounded like a woman, and pounding on the walls, and that terrified her, and so she ran toward her children's room and found what she found. And the police, you know, had taken the baby to the hospital, and then the hospital, she was told that she was very fortunate because, you know, had he been left go a few more minutes, he would have suffocated. So she goes home, she's talking to a neighbor and saying how grateful she is that everything went as okay. And the lady says to her, you know, I've lived here for over 50 years. And she said, really? And she said, yeah, there was a woman who lived in this house when I first moved here, and she had a child who died of sudden infant death syndrome. And she just kind of went crazy, and her husband and her split up, and she moved out, and I heard she committed suicide a few years back. She never was right after she found her little boy. And she said, isn't that odd that two people would have little boys that almost choked to death in the same room? And the woman began to wonder if what she had heard was that woman's spirit warning her that she needed to hurry or her child would have the same fate as the previous woman's child had.
I'd be wondering if there was something else in that house wanting to harm children.
Yeah, and that's a good question too. So we were talking about the lady that was naked along the road. So just for everybody who's interesting, I decided to look it up. Her name was Christine Skubish, and it was in 1994. And interesting enough, you said it was a Sacramento Bee. It was a Sacramento, California, where it happened. So I just looks like you were talking about it. I thought, oh, I'm just going to take a peek at that and see if I can find it real quick.
And I must have heard that from you because in January of 94, I was driving a 26-foot U-Haul with all of our worldly possessions in it and our car on a trailer behind it across the entire United States back to Pennsylvania.
Oh, God, love you.
Well, and that was a terrible winter. So I got all kinds of bad stories about that one, but none with ghosts though. So I must have heard that from you before, not in the
Yeah.
Sacramento Bee.
But like I said, it also was on Unsolved Mysteries. And they did interviews with the child's grandparents who were raising the child now, and the police officer, and the lady that saw the naked lady outside, laying along the side of the road, and all of that. And so it's a really fairly well documented story. So we're going to stay go back to England for a little while. So there's a place called the Manor House in Cold Ashton. Now there's a beautiful manor house. It's well kept. It's still utilized to this day, but only as like a museum, not a residence. And there are interesting stories about the house. Supposedly, there are people who have lost their way or run out of gas or whatever, and they see the house in the distance. And when they see it, it's lit, even though it's late in the evening. And they go up to the house looking for assistance, prior to cell phones, a phone to use, or directions. And a very helpful butler, old-fashioned butler, answers the door, and he says, can I help you? And they say, I'm lost, or I need gas, or whatever. And he gives them direction. You need to go this direction about a mile up. There's a gas station, or you need to turn at the next light, and you'll find your way to where you need to be. And on occasion, there have been people who have been so grateful for his assistance, which is always accurate, that they come back that way to thank him because, it was a big help whenever they were in a bad place. And they only that's only whenever they find out that, well, he's been dead since like 1906, and that the building's now kind of used only in the daytime as a museum, and that this is a story that has happened many, many times. So he's a very helpful spirit, and he always has good directions.
And persistent too, if he's
Yeah.
been around that long.
And it seems like the house looks like it's being actively lived in. They all talk about the lights and people moving, and there's no question in their mind that this isn't just somebody's home until the next day. Which actually kind of reminds me of there's this place called Baker's Mansion in Altoona, Pennsylvania, and there are stories that happened in was it 1976? We had the gas crisis, and people had the long gas lines and all that stuff. Do you remember that?
Oh, odd and even. Yes, I do.
Yep, odd and even. For those who don't have the faintest clue what we're talking about, they were rationing gas, and in order to keep the gas lines down, they would make you either had an odd or an even day based upon your license plate. and you could only go get gas on those days. So anyhow, during this time period, there's a couple stories that happened at the mansion. One of which was there was a young woman who late in the evening had gotten twisted up, and it's kind of an area where you have it's all one ways, and she didn't know what was going on. She saw the big house. It's a beautiful house. There were lights on in it. So she went up and she knocked at the door, and she was hoping somebody would answer it. Nobody answered it, so she knocked a second time. And this time somebody knocked at the door on the inside. And she said, "If you're, stop it. I just need help." And in 1976, we didn't have cell phones. So you really did have to rely on other people for help. And the figure knocked one more time on the door from the inside, and she said, "Please, I need help." And the person didn't respond. It just knocked again. So she left. She was really angry, and she got to her hotel room, and she thought about it, and she's like, "What a jerk. Here it is late at night, and I needed some help, and they could have at least, pointed me in the right direction. That was just a jerky thing to do." So the next day she decides to go back and kind of tell them off, and what crappy people are you? So she gets there, she reads the sign that she didn't see in the dark, and it says museum. And she's like, "But it's like 11, 12 o'clock at night." She's like, "What museum is open?" So she goes up and she asks to speak to the curator, and she tells the curator the story. And he's like, "Ma'am, I lock up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's nobody in this building at night." And she's like, "There was. Somebody was here just setting up a display or doing something, but there was." And the curator was absolutely, sure there was nobody in that building. And it kind of reminded me of that story, except this gentleman's a lot nicer. He does give directions. So another story I thought was really interesting is that the in Australia at the National Maritime Museum is where this story came from. So during the World War II era, there was a hospital in that area, and one of the nurses there told this story. She would One night she was there, and she was working when an older nurse in a very old-fashioned looking nursing uniform came up to her, and she said, "I know you're new, and you should probably check on so and so." And she pointed her in the right direction. Well, the woman went in, and the patient was definitely struggling. So she went to get help, got the patient settled. The doctor commended her on her vigilance. She moved on. And later on in the night, the older nurse showed up again, and she said, "You should probably check on Mr. So and so in room, blah, blah, blah." And this happened like four or five times throughout the night, where she was sent by this older nurse into an area where somebody was in jeopardy, and she got them assistance before anything bad happened. Different, types of things happening. Somebody couldn't breathe, a piece of equipment had turned itself off or was turned off, and things like that. And so finally, she says to one of the other nurses, "I really want to thank this nurse. She's been awesome." And she starts telling the story. And the nurse goes, "Oh, you've met Ruby." And she's like, "Ruby?" And she's like, "Yeah, she was a nurse who died a couple years ago who worked here. And there's been a lot of our new nurses that she seems to be directing. And so she'll appear to them and tell them, you need to empty this bedpan, you need to change this catheter tube, whatever, and give guidance while you're learning your nursing craft. So don't be surprised if you see Ruby again." And she's like, No, she was a real person." And they're like, "Yeah, she always appears that way, but it's Ruby, and she's been dead for several years." And it became a regular routine that the graduating nurses that were, doing their practicums would bump into Ruby.
You'd think that one of them would have gone.
Well, I think it's one of those things where they didn't know the story until they told the story. Like they would talk to somebody else because they thought it was a real nurse. And so they just, assumed until they like, "Hey, I want to thank her," or, "Who is she? She's really helpful." That kind of a thing. And then that's when you know, they would finally realize that she wasn't, because the older staff, you know, wouldn't tell them. I have to tell you, I've worked in nursing homes and places like that when I was young. And those stories, you don't get to hear them until they happen to you. Like, the older nurses hold them tight as a general rule. I'm not saying they never tell, but I've had a couple experiences in places like that, and I never knew until it happened to me. And then I said something to somebody and they were like, you should go talk to Mrs. So-and-so. And then you hear the story.
No, I meant that, you know, after they had the experience with the, yeah, with the nurse, then if they told someone and they said, oh yeah, that's Ruby. Mm-hmm. If they encountered Ruby again after that time, but it almost sounds like that they didn't after that.
No, point. Not after they knew the story for some reason. And in Boulder, Colorado, there's a hospital. And I've mentioned this before. I had a dear friend who was there. He passed away there in that hospital several years ago. And the week he passed away, he just sort of did a very quickly went downhill type thing. So he calls and I'm at work and my kids answered. And he said, I'm just letting you know that I'm in the hospital. Tell your mom, and this is the number, she can call me. So I call him later that night and he's like, hey, I'm doing okay. Everything's good and I'm going to be fine, but I just wanted you to know where I was. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then the next day his mother called and she's, you know, telling me that he's kind of took a turn for the worse. And then he called me that night and he said, I just want you to know that I saw the Watchers. And I'm like, you saw what? And I'm beginning to think, like, maybe he had drugs or something, you know, in his system from pain and what have you. And he's like, the Watchers, they have these people here that are the helpers. And they, when you see one of them, that means you're going to die. So I'm calling to let you know I'm going to die. And I love you and the kids. And don't worry, there's someone here to walk me over. Well, I didn't really know what to make of it. And I said, you know, I understand, but you're not going to die. Don't be ridiculous. You know, you've been a lot sicker than this before, because he'd had a chronic illness and what have you. And he said, no, darling, I'm going to die this time. And 4 or 5 hours later, his mom called and she said he had passed. And a couple of days later, I got a book in the mail. And it was from him, and in it he had written this story. And basically what he had done is, the day before all of this happened, he had been talking to the nurses, and he had told them that he had seen this woman with a black dress on, and she was standing at the foot of the bed. And he kept pushing the nurses, and he said, you know, he was into the paranormal, and he was like, what does that mean? Who is she? And one of the nurses finally broke down and told him, we call them the Watchers, and when they're seen in a room, it usually means the person's going to pass. And he wrote the story down, and he said, I just want you to know, even when I'm dying, darling, I would never forget to get you a ghost story. So he, you know, he said he saw it. And as he passed away, I can't honestly say that it was or wasn't true. I think it was. I know he believed it to be true.
Maybe I'm imagining this, but I thought you told a story, though, that if it wasn't you, it was one of your children actually got a message from him at some point later.
I did.
Okay.
Down in, I was at the Cashtown Inn, and this was 3-4 months after he passed. And we had always made a joke about the fact that he lived in PA for quite a while. He'd lived all over the country, but he lived in PA for quite a while. Always had wanted to go to the Cashtown Inn to ghost hunt in the basement, because that's a very famous area of the building. And I always said, one of these days we'll go do that, Steve. And then his mother got sick, and he started his journey to take her back to California, where she wanted to die. And they got as far as Boulder, and then his mom called me and she said, I don't think I can go any further, Patty, and I don't know how to tell him, because he's uprooted his life to do this for me, but I need to rest. So I called him and I talked to him and I told him, and they decided to stay to sojourn in Boulder for the winter. And it was this winter and that he passed away. So anyhow, I'm in the basement of Cashtown Inn co-hosting with Mark Nesbitt a paranormal event, and we're doing EVP session. And that particular building has a history of there being a biker. It was a biker bar in the 70s. And there's a biker who supposedly haunts there. And I said, I'm getting this energy. It's a biker. And I'm thinking it's, you know, this one particular one that we'd encountered before. And I'm like, this isn't right. This doesn't feel right. This is different. And my friend who passed away had been part of a motorcycle, like a, the, he was part of a major motorcycle gang in the Southern California when he was a young man, and had left it only because his brother kidnapped him and brought him to the East Coast, and got him off drugs and all this other stuff when he was a young man, and saved his life. Well, anyway, all of a sudden I got this smell and this scent of his cologne. And I said to Mark, I said, ask this person, what he calls me. And you hear, he never called me by my name. He always called me darling, never used my name. And you hear, it's me, darling. And I start to cry because he had this raspy cigarette, you know, user voice. And that's exactly what came through. And Mark looked at me kind of funny because he had no clue what was going on. And then I sat on a step and I said to everybody, I would like to tell you, this is my friend Steve. And I told them the story. And I'm like, you know, I know it's him because the odds on somebody else calling me darling, and it wasn't darling. It's always that Southern twang, darling, because he was from the South originally, never lost that Southern twang. So, yeah. So anyhow, that was the story about my friend and the watchers who eased people over from that hospital. It's, you know, it's just fascinating to me that we don't tell the stories that are good and the stories that are of people who have, you know, had kindness, as we talked in that, the last set of stories, we had talked about there being a place where the Bobby Mackey had that, the building. And one of the stories that I didn't tell was one about a car accident. And it was right outside of the Bobby Mackey bar and restaurant. And a woman in what looked like a costume from the 1930s. And if you remember, Johanna lived at that time and committed suicide after her father killed her lover. That this young woman came out and she had tablecloths. And there was a victim in a car who had been in this accident, was badly injured. And she walked right past the people who were trying to help. And she covered this woman in a couple of the tablecloths, is, you know, to keep her warm because she was in shock. And they all saw her. The woman in the car definitely spoke with her, and they were the tablecloths from inside of Bobby Mackey's. And later on, the family came back to thank him and find out who the young lady was who had been so kind to their loved one. And that's when he found the story out for the first time. And the building was completely closed. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And the only, when he heard the costuming and what have you, they described her as somebody from the 20s or 30s. He realized he was probably Johanna. So even in a negative haunting, you know, sometimes a ghost will do something untoward and kindly. And there are literally dozens and dozens of these stories, hundreds of these stories all around. I tell the story of a woman whose grandfather, we've told the story before, I won't tell the whole story, but of a woman whose grandfather saved a neighbor's child who was had a huge fever, and had the he not drawn the family, his family's attention to the fact that this family was struggling in the middle of the night, they wouldn't have gone over and asked if they could help, gotten the child to the hospital and saved the child's life. There are just literally dozens upon dozens upon dozens of those stories that I've collected over the years myself. And I will tell you, probably 70% of the stories are good stories. Maybe 10% or so are neither good nor bad. They just are there. But a lot of times people intervene. If you were a good person in life, you're still a good person. And if they feel like they can intervene, they will. And I've talked about, I know of a story where a person's home caught fire and they were, you know, alerted to it by the spirit that lived in the house with them. There are all kinds of stories of stuff like that. I know of a place where there's an 911 center and it's haunted, and whenever there's a serious call about to come in, the spirit will alert the ladies that are answering the phone by showing itself. And that's actually here in Pennsylvania, in southwestern Pennsylvania. There's a call center that happens at. And it's been reported many, many times, spirits that have been seen in ambulances riding with a patient who's in critical condition is almost as if a comfort to them, saying, "It's okay, hold on." There's all kinds of stories like this. And so I just thought I'd share some of the really nice stories, stories of people making it through, surviving, and doing things that are good. We talked about Flight 401, which was one of the biggest air disasters, and how after the plane crashed in the Florida Everglades, it was Eastern Airlines, they took the parts that were good from the plane and started putting them on other planes, and people started seeing the pilots sitting in the, not in the cockpit, but in the area where the guests would have been sitting. And it would only be on flights where there was going to be a problem, where one of the engines was going to cut out or there was going to be an accident of some sort. And they recognized, because it was a small community, so they would recognize the pilot. And it was the pilot and the one co-pilot. There were three pilots on that particular flight, and they all died. And Eastern didn't want to admit it, but interestingly enough, they pulled all the planes and took all the parts off of them from the wreckage and replaced them, because five or six different ghost stories popped up, and it was always like something happened on that particular flight after they saw the person.
I don't know, from a business standpoint. I mean, yeah, you don't want to scare away customers, but then that was also, it's like an alarm bell that something was going to happen, you know.
Well, it was, but and here's the thing is that it wasn't even the customers weren't the ones hearing about it. It was the staff.
Okay, but even so, there would have been a warning to them that
Yeah.
let's see what's going to go on, but yeah.
The airline was frowning on it. Pilots, aren't allowed. Like even today, pilots can't talk and report UFO encounters. They get pulled off the roster for a while, and they go through psych evals. And it was more so that way back in the 70s and 80s. And so the pilots, they didn't want to talk about it, but it was so prevalent. The stories were so prevalent, and they knew these pilots. Like it was staff that knew them, stewardesses who had served on planes with them previously, or something like that. And the stories made their way throughout the industry, and they tried to quiet them. And when they couldn't quiet them, they just pulled all the parts. They were like, "This is just too much." But it's a fascinating, story. And there was one, I think it was the one co-pilot, I believe. He was seen on multiple flights, and every flight there was something. There was a fire in the wing, or a engine went out, or something was going to happen. And he rode on each of those flights. So it's an interesting. I mean, so he was a good man, and everybody that knew him in life said he was a good man. And I think he was trying to warn them so that what happened to him in his flight didn't happen to others. So with that, I am done, and I hope everybody enjoyed these stories. I know my middle boy, who everybody knows listens to it, told me he wanted spooky stories and evil ghosts. And I gave it to him last time, and I told him he's just going to have to suck it up this week and enjoy the nice ghosts, because there are a lot of good, nice ghost stories, and I wanted to share some tonight.
And thank you for doing that.
Oh, I have so much fun doing it. I'm so grateful for everybody listening and tuning in. And I just thank you all from the bottom of my heart.
So anybody listening or viewing or whatever, please tell your friends and family who may be paranormal inclined. We'd like to try to grow the podcast if we can. I mean, it's not like we're gonna cold call people and say, "Would you like to listen to our podcast?"
Nope, but if you can share it with other folks, we have some pretty cool topics, I think. Looking at going back in time, and I want to do some more stories on. We did a set of stories a long, long time ago on people who had organ transplants. I want to go back into that area. I want to talk about murders that were solved by ghosts, not just their own murders, but in particular, the people that they got the organs from were murdered, and they actually solved the crime for the dead person. And those are some really cool stories that I can't wait to share with everybody. And there's a lot of other stuff. I have some really interesting Bigfoot stories that are not normal, from the normal realm of what you hear. Looking for some UFO stories. I don't do as many of those as a lot of podcasts do, but I find that they're redundant after a while. You know, and I like to try to find something new and different. So looking for some really unusual stories of UFO encounters that are not the norm. And I know they're out there. They're just not easy to find, but I shall keep looking.
All right. And if our listeners, viewers have experiences they'd like to share, again, in the description below, go to our link tree and there's the link for our email address. And you can remain completely anonymous. If you wish, I mean, yep. We can use first names, whatever. And that's, we've taken leads from listeners like that before. Yeah, I'm putting on my work hat again.
There you go. Yeah, if you check out the fairy episode we did just recently, that actually started out as a person sharing a story with us. And it led me down a really interesting path to a lot of other cool stories. So please, you know, share your stories and see where we lead. Because you may take us someplace I hadn't thought to go.
All righty. Thank you, Patty.
Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
And I would like to say I lost my train of thought, so I will cut this part out.